bust down that cracked wall after all, and they would have been beyond it. Maybe there never were people to rescue. Or maybe they were those skeletons. That would have been really awkward. Most likely, though, they were in the final chamber alongside some sort of horrible monster. We took another break. We needed it. It was really hot. Then we made our way to the single door on the opposite side of the room and opened it. Inside, we saw three fallen human bodies. One was right near the door, unmoving, with three huge claw marks across his back. He was facing the door. That told me that the door was probably going to close as soon as we entered, or that whatever had hit him had been fast enough to prevent him from leaving. Either was a concern. Another was near a different door, this one on the right side of the room. That was a woman, and she was trembling, a bleeding wound across her forehead. She had a golden key in her right hand. Unfortunately, that right hand was no longer connected to the rest of her body. The final body was near the center of the room. A sword and shield were lying next to him. I couldn't see any obvious injuries at a distance. More importantly, I couldn't see a monster, either. I turned to the woman that appeared to still be conscious. "We're here to rescue you. Can you talk?" She didn't even turn to acknowledge me. She just stared at her severed hand.
"She's in a bad way. Don't think we're getting much out of her."
Marissa frowned.
"Think the monster is going to show up the moment we go in?"
"Seems likely," Patrick replied.
I frowned. "And the door is probably going to close behind us."
"Think that key is for the other exit?"
Marissa gestured to the other doorway.
"We could make a run for it."
I think that was her plan. My eyes narrowed. And it didn't go well.
"What's our plan then?"
Patrick asked. I briefly debated going back to get one of those giant metal spheres to block the doorway and prevent it from closing behind us, but we were short on time. I didn't know how a person with a severed arm had survived this long, but I wasn't going to gamble on taking a few more minutes when she was in that bad of shape. "We do what they didn't do," I glanced to each of them. "We stick together." Patrick and Marissa nodded. We stepped inside as a team. The door slammed shut behind us, and the injured woman screamed. The monster descended from the ceiling, but after our lesson at the entrance, we were a little more ready for a threat from above. A long tail lashed at Patrick, but he expertly dodged out of the way. He wasn't ready for when the tail paused, revealing a snake-like head atop it. The snake had opened its jaws and exhaled a jet of fire toward us. I countered the flames with a shockwave from Celice Leanne, but, as with the giant, it didn't have the power to stop the fire completely. Patrick waved both hands and fired a burst of fire right back at it. The two flame attacks slammed into each other and spread outward, sending burning energy across the room. Fortunately, it didn't hit anyone directly. Marissa jumped and swung a fist at the snake head, but the tail whipped out of the way, and we got a better look at the main body. It was tremendous, at least 20 feet tall, with the body of a lion and the head of a goat.
"A chimera," Marissa mumbled. "Of the classic variety."
The three of us fell back into formation, while the chimera's goat head bleated into the air.
"What do we do against a chimera?"
Patrick asked.
"Dodge!"
Marissa replied in a panicked tone. The chimera had already started to charge. We rushed the sides of the room while it closed the distance, trying to trample over us. That did exactly what we'd been hoping to avoid. We were separated, with Marissa and I on the beast's right side and Patrick on the left. The tail swung toward Patrick again.
"Marissa, up!"
I yelled. She got my meaning, leaping into the air and aiming for the snake head before it could breathe fire again. The tail switched directions and opened its mouth hungrily.
"Resh!"
Marissa raised her arms to block, but she couldn't do much against fire breath without fire or ice magic. The snake head breathed flame, but only for a moment. Patrick jammed his new sword into the chimera's side, then stepped back and channeled a bolt of lightning into the metal. The new sword was ruined, but it had done its job well. Marissa flew through the flames, her shroud absorbing the brief blast, and slashed a blade aura-covered hand across the tail. Unfortunately, she hit too low, and the scales on the surface of the tail absorbed most of the blow. A flow of blood emerged from the wound, but the head wasn't severed. Marissa landed on Patrick's side of the Chimera. I lunged from the opposite side, stabbing it with Selyse Leanne. The Chimera swung toward me faster than I'd expected, hitting me hard with a claw. I flew backward, losing my grip on the sword and impacting with a wall. That was bad for me, but it was worse for the Chimera. Ice was already spreading from the wound, and it was getting further each moment. My barrier was badly cracked by the attack, but between that and the two shrouds, I was still in pretty good shape. Unfortunately, now I had the Chimera's attention, and I was unarmed and backed against a wall. The Chimera turned toward me and prepared to charge. One, I counted, focusing on my right hand.
Patrick, I need more height!
Marissa shouted as she charged at the creature from behind. Two, the Chimera charged, the snakehead poised to breathe down on me the moment it got close. Marissa jumped.
Levitate!
Three. Marissa flew twice as high this time, swung, and floated downward to the floor. When she hit the ground, the serpent's head fell next to her. The Chimera's remaining head roared as it continued the charge. I jumped too. Four. Good enough. Jump! The ring of jumping carried me upward, and I slammed a fist into the goat's head, releasing the mana I'd stored in my hand. And just like that, I punched out a 20-foot-tall Chimera. The creature fell to the ground, insensate. Marissa moved closer and swept her hand across the other neck, finishing the job. I groaned, rubbing my newly bruised hand, and retrieved Selyse Leanne. Patrick rushed to the woman in the corner.
It's going to be okay.
You killed it,
she mumbled.
You actually killed it.
It's going to be okay. We're going to get you to help.
We probably should have insisted on bringing a healer, but it was far too late at this point. If we were lucky, maybe the student waiting outside was a mender. After sheathing Selyse Leanne, I checked the nearest other person, while Patrick attempted to calm the wounded woman. It was remarkable she was still alive and conscious with such a serious injury. I assumed she was probably a guardian or a mender herself, and she had done something to stop the severed arm from bleeding. After a minute of checking, the other two didn't seem to be conscious or breathing. I was pretty sure they were dead, but I wasn't an expert. Either way, we'd found the three people. Marissa and I transported the fallen bodies as carefully as we could to the corner.
We're going to get out of here now, Patrick explained.
Wait,
the woman insisted.
Crystal, it should be in the next room.
She looked at her severed hand, still holding the key.
We could still get to the crystal and finish our mission.
I glanced at the other two. That was a sorely tempting prospect, but it wasn't our mission. I'm sorry. We can always come back for the crystal later. I shook my head. You and your companions need immediate medical treatment. She shook her head.
No, no, the crystal.
I'm with Corin here,
Patrick nodded.
Same,
Marissa replied.
Stay close.
Patrick picked up the severed hand, then rang the return bell. We found ourselves outside. The student outside was very, very surprised when six people appeared near him.
Duh!
Ordinarily I might have laughed, but I was in damage control mode. We have three injured people here. Are you a mender by any chance? He shook his head.
No, summoner. But I can summon something to get a message to town real fast. Hold on.
He summoned an air elemental, which flew to the settlement after receiving his instructions. Then we waited, dealing with the wounded as best we could. I used a couple lesser regeneration spells on each of them, but I doubted it would accomplish much. I didn't hold out much hope for the two that were unconscious, but I didn't say anything for fear that announcing that they were dead might disturb the survivor. About 10 minutes later, she lost consciousness too. I put my silver phoenix sigil on her, kicking myself for waiting so long, and then activated it. I explained what I was doing out loud because a part of me knew that none of this was real, as realistic as it was, and I wanted whoever was judging the whole thing to know that I was using a regeneration item on her. Fortunately, regeneration spells and items weren't harmful to people that were uninjured. That would have been a little awkward otherwise. It was about 10 minutes after that the medics arrived, carrying each of the people away. One of them took my sigil off and handed it back to me, explaining they would take it from there. I was grateful to have my sigil back and pinned it back on.
Well, the student assigned to watching us said, good work. I didn't think you'd make it out of there.
I nodded somberly. I'd have felt better if we'd managed to help all three victims, but two of them seemed beyond help by the time we'd gotten to the last room. Would that have been possible if we'd made it through the temple faster? I wasn't sure if I wanted to know the answer to that, but if I got a chance after the test was over, I planned to ask. We returned to Teft. Patrick was upbeat in spite of losing his new sword. I was kicking myself for failing to take any of those weird metal bars with me before we left the forge. I could have stored them in the Jaden box. In fairness, though, we were clearly being observed, and that might have caused me problems later. We explained what had happened to Teft, and he nodded along.
May I have the key that you forged?
We handed it to him.
Good. This may make our next trip into the Temple of Fire considerably easier.
He paused for a moment, then said,
you're dismissed for the day. Good work.
We retrieved our things, got directions to where we were supposed to make camp, and got some much-needed food and rest. We spent the next few days working within the settlement itself. I spent most of my time reinforcing the enchantments on the area, just as Teft had originally intended for me to do. It felt good to get to use my enchanting skills for something practical that could potentially help protect a big group of people. I knew it was all just a test, but if this was the type of thing that an enchanter did for the military, I didn't hate it as much as I'd expected. Desmond, Kira, and Rupert met up with us each day after they'd finished their own work. I got used to having them in our camp. Roland, Jin, and Sarah, however, did not. Apparently, they'd all ended up being assigned to duties elsewhere. I hoped that meant that Sarah and Jin might be going to the Van Reach Mountains, but that turned out to be a bit too optimistic. When they finally met back up with us almost a week later, Sarah explained that they'd simply been on long-distance reconnaissance duty, searching for a good location for another settlement site. I'd gotten so used to working at the settlement that it almost came as a shock when Teft told us it was time to leave.
Congratulations! You haven't completely failed at all of your responsibilities here. Now it's time to go home, and you'll find out if your performance was good enough to make it to the next year.
That wasn't exactly encouraging, but it was as good as I could expect out of Teft. One question before we go, I asked. Those people we got out of the temple. Did any of them survive? Teft looked stymied for a moment. Then he smiled softly and nodded.
Yes, one of them made it. You did well.
That might have been an on-the-spot decision, but it still felt good to know that maybe we'd done at least a little bit of good. I hoped that if we encountered a similar scenario that was real, we'd manage to do even better. The whole team was reassembled for the journey back to the train station, minus the two people who had already been eliminated, of course. The trek back was much easier than the way there. We'd gotten used to each other, as well as being outdoors. I was still anxious to get home, though. I needed a real shower. We were a little surprised when a group of people met us on the road. They were adults, meaning they weren't a group of students working for the Tales of Orochi looking to get in a last-minute ambush. At first, I expected them to be a group of Soaring Wings who were there to escort us back, but they weren't wearing armor or the right colors. They were dressed in Valian military uniforms, two men and two women, well-equipped.
Students, attention!
The lead figure stepped forward. He was a broad-shouldered man with brown hair streaked with just a hint of gray. We didn't know who they were, but we still knew how to snap to attention.
We are here on behalf of Valia's Divinatory Division.
He turned toward me.
Corn Cadence, you're going to need to come with us.
Divinatory Division? Meaning military intelligence? That can't possibly be good. I inspected them again, activating my attunement. Their auras were clear, suppressed, That implied that they were all at least Sunstone level, in order to have that level of control. They were carrying some enchanted items, too. Carnelian-level shield sigils and weapons. That wasn't terribly surprising. The military would have better standard-issue gear than students, but it was still impressive. That wasn't what gave me a pause for concern, though. I could see the glow of attunement marks on most of the four. The speaker had a heart mark. Two of the others had marks on their right hands, unsurprising for combatants. The last had a mark on her left leg. None of that was a problem. The worrying part was that the last soldier with the leg mark also had a glowing spot in the back of her right shoulder. That wasn't a spot for attunements, but I did remember something else that could be found in that location on someone's body. I took a deep breath and stepped forward. Sir? May I ask what this is about, sir? He shook his head.
You will be informed of everything you need to know in private. Please, come this way.
Sir, may I have a few moments to hand off some key information and items my team will need to complete their assignment before we leave? He tensed his jaw.
You have 2 minutes.
Sarah, come here. I waved for her to follow me and headed to the back of the wagon. What's this about, Corin? Sarah asked. The tension situation? I shook my head, shuffling through the bag at my side. I don't know. Probably. But that's not what concerns me. Those aren't Valian soldiers. What? Or at least, not just Valian soldiers. I pulled the Jaden box out of my bag and flipped open the lid. Retrieve empty vial. An empty alchemical vial appeared. I opened the top. Hold this open. She held the box. Corin? I drew my sword just an inch and ran my index finger across the blade. Then, I put my finger over the vial and squeezed. Corin, what are you- Oh, she quieted, considering. You handing me the box along with it? I shook my head. No, it's not ready for a summoning spell, and I might need the contents. But I want you to hold onto the vial and use it to track me if necessary. I stoppered the vial and handed it to her. She frowned, shoving it in a pouch. We could probably just track you using me, you know. I didn't want to say that I still wasn't sure that we were blood-related. You'll probably get better range with my blood. Just find a diviner if you don't see me soon. And if you need to follow me, bring Derek and Karis. These guys are dangerous. I leaned forward and whispered in her ears, Servants of the Tyrant. Her eyes widened. Seriously? I gave her an apologetic tip of my head. You shouldn't go with them. We should fight. I shook my head. Four adults, each of whom is at least Sunstone, probably Citrine or Emerald. No, most if not all of us would die even if all of us were coordinated. And we're not. We're a bunch of students. Precautions? Sarah asked. I'll have Veniv watch you from the sky. I nodded. Roland can monitor me too.
Time to go, kid,
one of the soldiers yelled. Keep the team intact. I'll be back.
Let me go with you.
Sarah grabbed my arm.
They'll want me too if they know I'm your family.
I shook my head. No, too much of a risk. If my blood dries up, you're the best method for tracking me down, and there's no reason to put us both in danger at the same time. I pulled free from her. Gotta go, sis.
Sis?
I shrugged a shoulder.
It works.
I turned and walked off to join the soldiers. Together, we marched into the woods. I was already making my first move. When I'd left Sarah, I hadn't just cut my finger. I'd attached a strand of mana to the box, too, and I was going to keep making that strand longer as I walked. I'd leave myself a trail that I could follow back to the others, or that they could follow to me if they picked it up. Veniv's airborne surveillance would be more effective for that, but I wanted redundancies. So, mind telling me what this is about? The leader shook his head.
Not yet. You're not in trouble, though. Don't worry about failing out of your class. That'll be taken care of.
Ha, like that was what I was worried about. Thanks, that makes me feel a little better. Completely, blatantly untrue. We kept walking. What was I doing? The soldiers looked relatively at ease, but I couldn't be. If I had miscalculated, there was a reasonable chance that they were going to kill me out here. I had no chance of winning against four people of Sunstone level or higher. None. Should I have taken Sarah's route and tried to rally everyone for a fight? No, I told myself. That would have just gotten other people killed, and I need to know what these people want with me. We walked for what felt like at least an hour. They weren't silent during that time. It was worse than that. They were casual. One of them, Michelle, I got from context, talked about wanting to see a new play that was coming out soon. She was one of the ones with a hand mark. Another, Woods, complained about his feet hurting. Carter wanted Woods to read a book that she was excited about. The leader, Thomas, wanted Michelle to go drinking with him. None of that was important. I was studying little details when I could. Michelle isn't wearing a glove. It took me a few minutes to get an angle where I could take a look without appearing too obvious. Guardian. Older generation mark, but I think it's citrine. Woods doesn't just have sore feet. He favors his right leg. He has an old injury. He's wearing a glove, but from the way he talks, I think he's a close combat fighter too. He's wearing a sword. The others have dueling canes. Carter is the one with the shoulder mark. Can't get a good look at it, or her leg mark. Thomas is breathing a little more heavily than the others. A cold, maybe? I don't think I can do anything with that right now. Wait. Hold on. He has a second mark on his back. Lungs, then. That made him more dangerous, but at least it wasn't another shoulder mark. I didn't know what those did, but from what Karis had explained, anyone with one would be at least a citrine or emerald-level threat. I should have asked for more about what the followers of the tyrant were capable of. Now, if I had to fight, I was going in virtually blind, and that meant I wasn't planning to fight at all. I needed to find every possible alternative, every means of escape. The odds of that working narrowed further when we reached our destination. A cabin in the middle of the woods. Thomas walked up and knocked on the door. A moment later, it opened, and I took a step back. The young woman on the other side wasn't wearing a military uniform. She had long blonde hair, perfectly styled, and wore a fire red dress. The casual look would have told me she was dressed for a ball, but a closer inspection of the dress showed that it consisted of threads with a faint metallic sheen. That's iron weave, or something like it. The same thing they used to make dueling tunics. She just dyed it red to make it look fancy. Similarly, she was wearing several pieces of gaudy-looking jewelry, but they weren't cosmetic. Well, most of the pieces weren't. Her necklace glowed with an emerald-level enchantment, and the two overly large crystals on the rings on her hands were essence crystals. High-density ones, at least class 3 or 4. They were probably worth a fortune. She had a second necklace, or something else, glowing green under the high collar of her dress. That was unusual, considering two enchanted items in the same location tended to interfere with each other. Having two powerful items in the same location was a strange risk. Maybe someone as powerful as she was had a workaround, though. My conclusion? She was a tremendously dangerous person with a carefully cultivated appearance of indulgence. And with that, I had a good idea of who I was talking to and how dangerous my situation had become. Corin Cadence, Elorotheus gave me a charming smile with just the slightest hint of her teeth showing. I believe you wished to speak to me. I have made a terrible mistake. I didn't dare step forward, so I chose to bow instead. Lady Theus, it's a pleasure to finally make your acquaintance. I hadn't expected for it to be under these circumstances, but that was probably obvious. Elora returned my bow.
The pleasure is mine. I believe it's long past time we discussed some issues of mutual interest.
Elora stepped outside. The soldiers parted for her.
Would you like any refreshments? I have a bit of tea inside.
I shook my head. If you don't mind, I'd prefer some answers.
Straight to business, then. You're very much like your brother in that regard.
My heart skipped a beat. My brother? I was feigning my reaction to a degree. I was reasonably confident she was working with Tristan at one point or another. But a part of that reaction was real, too. I still didn't know how to handle the fact that Tristan was both alive and working with some very dangerous people.
Ah, yes. What do you know about your brother, Corin?
I narrowed my eyes. My brother entered the spire 5 years ago. He failed his judgment, and he never returned. Alora smiled.
You're making some interesting assumptions there, but you've given me an important answer with that, and so I owe you one in exchange. What would you like to know?
What are you working on with Tristan? She shook her head.
Poorly phrased. Currently, the answer to that would be nothing. My turn. Your dear mother. How is she?
You probably know better than I do.
That doesn't help me, dear. Try again.
I didn't like this sort of information-gathering game. I recognized what she was doing, of course, trying to pry information out of me that I wouldn't even realize was important. Sarah would have been better at countering that sort of strategy. I had no patience for it. I haven't seen my mother in close to 3 years. As far as I know, she's out of the country.
Ah, now that is helpful. Your turn.
I narrowed my eyes. Fine. If she's gonna play this way, I'm gonna ask something I actually care about. What do you know about what happened with Tristan in the spire?
I do think it would be better to ask him that question, don't you?
I folded my arms. I don't exactly have the means to do that.
I think we both know that you do, darling.
She knows about the book. Either that, or she wants to try to gauge my reaction to her statement. Very well, an alternate question. What's the point to all this? Kidnapping me? Alora laughed.
Oh, my dear Corin, we're not doing anything so base as kidnapping you. We're extracting you.
I raised an eyebrow. Extracting? As in from a dangerous situation?
Quite. But you owe me 2 questions now. Let me see. What do you know about any weakness that the visage Katashi might possess?
One of the soldiers, Woods, shuffled uncomfortably. I considered the question. How much do I want to give these people? Nothing, I decided almost immediately. Not until I know their motives. But I have to at least make what I'm saying sound convincing in order to ask other questions myself. I can make an opportunity out of this, provided they don't just kill me afterward. His healing abilities are weaker than those of his sister, Ferris. Alora narrowed her eyes.
And how would you know that?
Because someone suffered an injury that he couldn't heal, but he suggested that Ferris might be able to. You've asked 2 questions. Now it's my turn.
That was a follow-up, but very well. I'm amused. You may ask.
Why choose to send people for me right now? You could have just sent me an invitation to meet you sometime after the test. She shook her head.
And my dear sweet Derek would have dissuaded you, or tailed you. No, you're isolated out here. I can't have Derek tainting your mind or dashing in to carry you off somewhere.
I nodded. It was a reasonable assessment.
You seem nervous. Why?
I blinked. Because I was worried I was going to be executed?
Oh, dear. No, nothing of the sort, I assure you. You're far too useful right now.
The last 2 words didn't evade my notice. Okay, you claim you're here to extract me. Where do you plan to take me?
Why, Corin, I'm going to make all your dreams come true.
She clasped her hands together.
I'm taking you to your brother.
I took a step back. How? The Serpent Spire is locked. Alora laughed.
A 2nd question, but I'll humor you. Locks have keys, darling. Now my turn. What has Derek told you about me?
The jilted lover looking for gossip? No, this is more tactical. He misses you?
Nonsense. He would never say that.
I shook my head. It's not what he says. It's what he doesn't say. That was one of those lines that sounded much deeper and more philosophical than it actually was. Unfortunately, my paltry platitudes were ineffective.
Your assessment, while adorable, is not what I needed. What has he told you about me?
Not much, I admitted. He told me that you're a powerful summoner. I think he used to climb with you, and you used to know Tristan as children. You and Tristan were working together for a while, and you tried to bring Derek in on your plans. Derek refused, and you parted ways.
True enough. Uninteresting, but mostly accurate. Go ahead.
I nodded. I take it you're the one who hired the Blackstone bandits to keep an eye on me?
I wouldn't quite call it hiring, but yes, I was the reason they were looking after you for a time.
She smiled.
Let me ask you something that might actually have a useful answer.
Alora smiled.
How much do you know about the man who calls himself Karas Salarian?
Carter turned and looked straight at Alora, then to me. She was clearly interested. A bit? He's a criminal who you attempted to arrest, working with my mother. He escaped.
Intriguing. I believe you know a good deal more than that.
I slowly moved my head up and down, considering what was safe to say. He's a foreigner and an expert combatant. I watched a memory crystal of your fight with him. He's comparable to an emerald level attuned, if not stronger.
You're dodging.
I shrugged. Maybe you should have been more specific. Elora waved a hand, her crystal ring glimmering as the light on it shifted.
Very well, then. Go ahead.
I glanced to Carter, then back to Elora. How long have you been working with servants of the Tyrant in Gold? Elora frowned. What? The soldiers all tensed, turning toward me. I may have just made another terrible mistake, but resh it, if she honestly doesn't know, I'd rather have one potential ally than zero. Carter has a magical mark on the back of her right shoulder that... Eyes turned toward Carter. Carter took a few steps back and reached into her pouch. Woods tackled her to the ground. I heard a snap. It wasn't from the impact, though. Woods pulled Carter's arms behind her.
Disarm and search her!
Alora clapped her hands together.
You who are born of the serpent, wrought with scales of adamant and bearing claws of fire, I call upon our pact. Visage of venom, hear my voice. Wyvern, I summon you.
A draconic beast appeared in the air above Alora, roaring into the sky. It was considerably larger than the versions she'd summoned against Derek and Sarah in the survival match. Either she'd been holding back then, or she'd grown considerably stronger in the last few months. Possibly both. Michelle moved to help hold Carter's legs down, while Thomas flipped open Carter's pouch, pulling her hand out of it and retrieving what she'd grabbed. A stick now snapped in two.
What's this?
Thomas demanded. Carter chuckled.
A twig, obviously, sir. Never seen one before?
Oh, no. I turned to Alora.
That's a signaling item. We need to leave right now.
Alora turned to look at me, her eyes narrowing. Then, slowly, she nodded.
Agreed. Finish disarming her, then we're getting out of here.
You're too late,
Carter laughed again.
He's already here.
There was a blur of movement. Then Woods fell backward, staring at two arms that were no longer connected to his hands. Thomas had just enough time to open his mouth before a blur slammed into his throat. His hands reached up toward a growing line of red. Michelle's aura flared yellow for an instant before something struck her in the jaw, slamming her into the ground hard enough to send her into a tumble across the forest floor. The attacker was faster than my eyes could perceive. Then, someone was looming above Carter, a look of disdain on his face as he lifted and then tossed Woods's severed hands.
Attunements.
The figure wiped his own blood-stained hands against his previously pristine white shirt.
You think so highly of them, and yet they can't help you in the slightest if you're suppressing them.
He shook his head.
Not that little ones like yours would have mattered anyway.
The man was tall, slender, with short hair that had been dyed a dark green tone. His garb was entirely white, aside from the bloodstains. His eyes were bright yellow, almost gold.
Now, he turned down to Carter, what's all this nonsense?
Carter stumbled to her feet.
I'm sorry, I've been compromised. We were instructed to suppress our attunements, and I couldn't hide the mark properly.
The man raised a blood-stained finger to her lips.
That's enough, darling. No need for excuses. We'll clean things up.
To the side, Alora moved a finger. The wyvern dove. The man turned, frowned, and dodged a swipe from a barbed tail.
Elias, Warden of the Adamantine Wall, I summon you!
A titanic stone figure burst from the ground in front of Alora. I'd seen this before in my vision of her fight with Karras, but I hadn't seen it in person. The man smacked the wyvern's tail to the side with a palm, looking up at the stone golem.
Hmm. Neat.
Elias, bind him with chains of authority!
Golden chains manifested around the man, pulling him toward the ground. He frowned. Then the wyvern slammed its tail into his chest. He didn't move an inch. That kind of mass should have smashed through solid stone, but he didn't even seem to notice the impact. The blood-stained man just stared blankly for a moment, then shook his head.
No, I don't think you're doing this right.
He touched a hand to the chains.
You see, this is all magic. The chains.
He closed his eyes and the chains vanished.
This rather vicious beast.
The man vanished, then reappeared with his hand grabbing the creature's tail. Then the wyvern vanished too. The man pointed at the golem.
This one looks sturdier, but in truth, it's the same.
He walked casually toward the massive golem as it brought its fists down on top of him. It must have been 2 stories tall, dozens of tons in weight. He raised a hand and caught the descending stone fist. For the first time, he seemed to show a hint of effort just for an instant, and then the golem collapsed into an inert pile of stone.
Delicious.
He smiled, turning back toward Carter.
Now where were we?
We were leaving, I believe, my lord Saffron.
Saffron? That's one of those S names Karras warned me about. The man, Saffron, nodded.
Ah, yes, yes.
He turned toward Alora.
But she was rather rude, wasn't she?
He took a step forward, then paused. Thomas had grabbed his leg. The wound on Thomas's neck was gone.
Never leave a healer in a condition to heal themselves, monster. Now die!
A black aura flared from Thomas's hands, burning through Saffron's pant leg. Saffron winced.
Good advice. I'll offer some in return.
Saffron shook his leg free, then knelt down. He showed no signs of injury.
Don't talk so much in the middle of a fight, especially when you're completely outmatched. Here, I'll help.
There was another blur. Then Thomas fell backward, letting out a distorted scream. All that had happened in a handful of seconds. I wasn't waiting for anything else. I bolted toward the woods. If anyone was smart and still alive, they'd follow me. Haste! I threw as much mana as I could into my legs. I didn't care about finesse right now. Saffron appeared right in front of me. I barely stopped myself from running right into him.
You're fleeing from me.
He stared at me. I'm not with them, I managed to stammer. His eyes narrowed.
No? Interesting. Sit.
I found myself sitting.
Good boy. We'll talk when I'm done.
He vanished again. My mind was screaming to get up, but my body wouldn't respond. This is no time for half measures. I reached up and touched my enchanter attunement. Then I flooded it with pure mana from my hand. More. More. I charged my attunement with mana until my hand burned and trembled with agony, but I still couldn't make myself stand. Shivering, I pushed myself around to look back in the direction I'd come from. The mental command forced me to sit, but it wasn't restricting me from doing anything else. The first thing I considered was pulling my own signaling stick out of the Jaden box, but that wasn't likely to work. Derek was too far away to get to me quickly, and I didn't even know if the stick would work at all at this range. Instead, I pulled the signal monitor off my shield sigil. That would trigger the tracking device to activate. It was a slim hope that the soaring wings would arrive in time to help. In truth, I didn't know if they could handle a threat like this anyway. I didn't even know if Derek could. But I wasn't going to let myself die without doing everything I could to try to survive. Thomas was pawing at his mouth, trying to heal a missing tongue, perhaps. Michelle was back on her feet. Her citrine aura active. I watched as she focused mana in a fist and threw a punch at Saffron. Saffron stepped to the side, avoiding the attack as if it had come at him in slow motion. Then Saffron's hand moved like a blur and I saw a splatter of crimson across the forest floor. Michelle fell to her knees, clutching at what was left of her throat. She didn't rise again after that. I shivered. I still couldn't stand. Instead, I turned toward a tree, tilting my feet. Jump! It wasn't much, but I blasted myself a few feet to the side. Jump! I pushed myself further, trying to conceal myself from view. I wasn't going to get very far with just the ring moving me, but maybe Saffron would forget about me if I was lucky. At the moment, he was walking toward Elora. She hurled blasts of fire and lightning from her hands, but he just walked through them, ignoring the attacks entirely. They vanished when they hit him. An expression of understanding crossed Elora's face, and she changed tactics. Torrent of stone! A tornado of dozens of stone spears appeared around her.
Interesting strategy.
Saffron turned toward her and tilted his head in acknowledgement.
You've summoned actual stone. Only the force carrying them is magical.
The spears flew forward in a swarm, slamming into him. On contact, they shattered into splinters.
Unfortunately, they're simply not good enough. I do commend your efforts, though.
He nodded.
Wait a moment. Why do you look so familiar?
While they were distracted with each other, I reached into my bag. I needed a way to get myself out of there, and I couldn't do it while I was forced to remain seated. Retrieve Ring of Derek Controlling. The ring that Ordin had used to control Derek wasn't explicitly designed to control him, but I used the name because it was memorable. An ordinary enchanter wouldn't have had much use for the ring, unless they were the one who had made it. It stored a bit of Ordin's mana inside a rune, which made the runes respond to her voice commands. I understood how it worked because I'd made several of the same type of rune while working on the tiles for Tef's final exam. Ordin was a wise enough enchanter to put anti-tampering runes on it to prevent any of the runes from being added or removed. She did not, however, account for an arbiter who could purify the mana in a rune that already existed. I touched the rune that contained Ordin's mana and activated my arbiter attunement. In moments, Ordin's mana signature was gone.
You will desist at once,
Alora's voice trembled.
Will I now? Oh, no. I know where I know you from.
Saffron broke into a fit of laughter, doubling over.
Oh, how fun. I never thought... No, I can't. Oh, this is so unfortunate.
A spear burst from the ground under him, its crystalline form sparkling like diamond. It pierced straight through Saffron's chest. Blood pooled around the wound. Elora waved a hand. Five more spears shot up from the ground, piercing through his body with similar ease. Trash! Elora coughed. She must have been overusing her lung mana with all those spells.
You'll pay for...
Saffron's hand reached down, snapping the first spear in twain. After that success, I saw a blur of rapid motion as he destroyed the rest. He tumbled to the ground, then reached backward awkwardly to extract the remains of the spears from his body.
Fascinating.
He coughed, tossing a bit of spear to the ground.
That was unexpected.
I slipped the ring on my hand. I wasn't sure if it would work, but I had to try. I whispered to myself, "Stand up." The ring activated immediately. I felt perception mana flood into me from the enchantments as the command took effect. But I didn't stand. Saffron's spell was stronger than the ring. I felt my heart pounding in my chest as panic threatened to overwhelm me. But I had to keep fighting. I wouldn't let myself stop. The conflicting commands burned in my mind, and I shivered with the effort. Stand up, I repeated. The ring activated again. Saffron cracked his neck, then his body blurred, and the remaining spears had been tossed to the side. As I watched, the gaping wounds on his body began to close.
It's been quite some time since I've found anything that can hurt me.
Saffron bowed toward Elora.
You have truly impressed me.
Keep watching.
Elora clapped her hands together. A dozen more of the diamantine spears burst from the ground, but they didn't hit anything. Saffron was next to Elora now.
I'm afraid that won't work a second time. I was quite distracted at first, but I was complimenting you. You shouldn't be so rude.
Elora took a step back.
You're...
He raised a blood-stained finger toward her lips.
Shh!
Alora glared at him. Stand up, I told myself again, still shivering as the conflicting mana worked within my body. Saffron's spell snapped. Slowly, I stood up, just in time to see Carter walking toward me. Saffron was still staring at Alora.
Now, tell me, where did you get that face?
Alora glared at him for one more moment, then looked to where the soldiers were lying bleeding on the ground.
This is a simple question. Where did you get your face?
My parents, obviously. Alora took a step back. Saffron shook his head.
No, no, that's not what I meant. Think about my question.
Carter dropped into a fighting stance as she approached, glaring at me. You're going to pay for screwing my cover. Rush! Almost made it. She's probably citrine level or higher, and a leg marked. That means she's close combat focused. I don't know if I can handle her. I reached into my bag again as Carter drew closer. Retrieve signaling stick. Carter paused, staring as I pulled the stick out of the bag. Not one step closer. I waved the stick. You know what this is. Carter continued to approach, but more cautiously. Might just be a stick you found on the floor. Alora was still talking to Saffron, but I couldn't focus on that while my own life was at risk. I moved my hands to brace for breaking it. Think about how I recognized yours immediately, and how I recognized your mark. You're an enchanter. You could have... I decided to gamble. I'd advise you to stop walking now. Sterling will be very upset if I call him all the way out here. I'd picked a random name, the first one I'd remembered from the S names that Karis had given me. From the way that Carter paled and took a step back, I took it I'd hit the mark. Now, let's not be hasty, she said. You just hand that over to me and we'll get this sorted out. Not going to happen. You stand down, and I'll talk this over with your master directly. Then you can tell him why you were involved with interrupting my mission for this nonsense. I didn't... My gamble was working, but there was a problem. Saffron seemed to have run out of patience for Alora, and now his hands were wrapped around her neck. If I let things go, maybe I could have simply talked my way out of the situation. If I'd sold Carter with my lies, maybe Saffron would have listened too. But even if I didn't approve of everything that Alora had done, I couldn't just watch her die. Not just out of my general pacifism in this case. She was my best lead on information about my brother. I took a few steps forward, ignoring Carter. She actually stepped away from me as I moved closer to Saffron. I whispered to myself, "Don't listen to any of Saffron's commands." The ring activated again. I didn't know if doing that in advance would be enough to shield me if he commanded me again, but it was better than nothing. Then I addressed Saffron directly, putting on a veil of false confidence. "Please stop that, Saffron. My master has made something of an investment in that one, and I've been asked to ensure she isn't harmed." I casually waved the stick in the air, hoping it would get his attention. He turned his head toward me.
"What master are you... Wait. How are you standing?"
I raised my hand and showed him the ring. "A small gift from my master protected me." I considered my next words closely. "Sterling would not be pleased if I was forced to do the bidding of others."
"Sterling." He almost spat the word. "This girl is one of his projects?"
I nodded with the utmost confidence, having zero idea of what I was talking about. "Of course. Can't you see why?" He glanced at her, then back to me.
"This is a bit perverse, even by his standards."
Saffron grinned.
"But I can see the appeal. There is one problem, however."
"Oh?"
Saffron turned back to Alora. "I've always enjoyed breaking my brother's toys."
I heard a snap. Alora's fingers. And then she vanished. Saffron's shoulders sagged.
"Really? She can teleport?"
He blurred again, appearing at Carter's side.
"Idiot. You didn't tell me they had a teleporter."
"Forgive me, Lord Saffron. I assumed you knew."
"Deflecting blame? You'll be punished for that later. But for now,
I should finish here,
Saffron turned to me.
Now, tell me your name, rank, and authentication phrase.
The ring activated, sending me a command to obey. I appear to have made a terrible mistake. I'd purified the rune that was responsible for filtering when the ring activated. At the moment, that meant that it would activate if anyone gave me a verbal command. I could fix that eventually, but it would require making permanent modifications to the ring. My previous command to ignore Saffron was still at work. The end result was that a surge of pain flooded through my body as the commands conflicted. I wasn't ready for it like I had been when I'd activated the ring in the first place, and I ended up falling backward in surprise. Saffron stalked forward toward me.
I said, "Now, boy."
I fought to resist as the compulsion activated again. A few moments later, I would have failed. Eloratheus appeared next to me and grabbed me by the arm. I didn't resist in the slightest. She snapped her fingers, and then we were elsewhere. We appeared right outside of Derek's mansion. Alora fell forward and vomited noisily. I managed to steady her enough that she didn't fall into her own mess. My own head was still swimming, but I was clearly in better shape than she was.
"Door,"
Alora managed to say. I grabbed the handle and pulled the door open. By the time I turned back to her, Alora had fallen to the ground. Not in her mess, fortunately, but her eyes were closed. I picked her up and shouted as I walked inside.
"Derek! Karis! Help!"
I carried Alora inside, only managing a few steps before Derek came running down the stairs. He was unarmed. He looked like he'd just gotten out of bed wearing night clothes, a silver bracelet on his right wrist, and a crimson bracelet on the left. He was also wearing a necklace that looked vaguely familiar.
"Corin? What's..."
He took a moment to process what he was seeing.
"I'll take her."
Derek ran over, gingerly slipping his arms under Alora and lifting her.
"Close the door and tell me what happened."
"Get Karis, now!"
I ran back to the door, lifting the horizontal bar across it. This manor was built like a fortress, and the door was designed accordingly.
"Karis isn't here right now. Why?"
A fist burst through the front door. "Because there is a slim possibility that we may have been followed by a child of the tyrant in gold." Derek stared at the door.
"Oh. Yeah, that's bad."
Derek looked from side to side.
"Take her somewhere safe."
Alora groaned in his arms.
"No. Down."
Derek set Alora down gently on the floor, then put his hand on the crimson bracelet.
"Delsis, I summon you."
A crimson-skinned figure appeared at his side, blazing winds whipping around him. Derek pointed at the back of the room.
"Find Karis and bring him back here immediately."
The flame creature nodded, then seemed to condense as it shifted in form to a blazing bird and flew out straight through the rear wall, leaving a bird-shaped hole. The door flew off its hinges. Saffron stood in the doorway.
"I do not like it when people leave me in the middle of a conversation."
Derek took a step forward.
"Sir, you have just broken my front door. I do not appreciate that."
Saffron turned his gaze toward Derek.
"I'm terribly sorry. I mean no offense. I just need to dismember those two a little bit. Then I'll fix your door."
He shook his head.
"No, I probably won't."
Derek's aura brightened to emerald, and he put a hand on the silver bracelet.
"Tavare,
Stop, Derek!" Alora grabbed his leg. She was still having trouble standing.
"He absorbs magic. It works on summons."
"Absorbs?" I'd seen him make those monsters vanish, but I hadn't understood what was happening. Derek nodded.
"Get yourself and Corin out of here, at least until you recover enough to help."
Saffron took a step forward.
"Those are my prey."
His eyes narrowed.
"I did not give them permission to leave."
Saffron vanished again. When he reappeared, his fingers were an inch away from punching through the center of Alora's chest. Saffron's expression was perplexed. He struggled to move further. Derek had grabbed him around the wrist.
"I think not."
Then Derek slammed a fist into Saffron's face. The child of the tyrant fell backward with a bloody lip. Saffron raised a hand, wiping away the blood with an already filthy hand.
"Now that
is interesting. Derek, be careful,
I managed. Then I ran for the stairs. From the corner of my eye, I saw a fight that was little more than a blur. It was immediately evident that I had never seen Derek use a fraction of his true strength. When Derek flew past me and crashed into the stairwell, it became apparent that even his true strength might not be enough. Derek was moving again in an instant, and I was running again a moment later. When I was on the second floor, I paused. What could I even do in a fight like this? The first order of business was pulling off the ring of Derek controlling. I dropped it back into my bag, along with the stick. I'd look into modifying the ring later, but for the moment, it was a liability if anyone could command me to do anything. If I wanted to escape, that seemed fairly simple. I could go to the roof, jump off, and use the ring of jumping to flee to safety. But would that even work? This thing had followed us all the way here in moments. It clearly had some kind of tracking and teleportation, not to mention movement that was so fast I couldn't even perceive it. How can I fight this thing? I could get Selyse Leanne, but he absorbs magic. Selyse Leanne probably wouldn't hurt him, if I could even land a hit at all. Absorbing magic. I ran toward Sarah's room instead of my own. I found Sarah's, the Song of Harmony, lying next to her bed. Like deflects like. Will it work? I wasn't sure, but I had to try. I grabbed the sword and ran down the stairs. Derek swung a fist at Saffron, but the tyrant's child stepped back and avoided the swing. Blood was trailing down the right side of Derek's face. His right eye was closed. Saffron pointed at Derek.
I tire of this. Sit.
Derek's necklace flashed with sudden light.
Nah.
Then Derek stepped in and slammed a fist into Saffron's gut. Saffron stumbled back, startled.
What? How?
Derek didn't slow down to explain. He just launched a hail of punches that sent the tyrant's child staggering back. Meanwhile, I could see Alora on the opposite side of the room. There was a glowing aura of mana around her hands, white mixed with crimson. Saffron swept at Derek's legs, but Derek hopped over it and kicked Saffron in the chest. The tyrant's child stumbled back, snarling, and then caught Derek's arm on the next swing.
This has been absolutely delightful, but I'm afraid you're just not good enough.
Saffron shook his head.
A disappointment, really. I was hoping...
Derek slammed his other fist into Saffron's jaw, knocking the tyrant's child back a step. Saffron just shook his head and kept talking.
For a real challenge today, like I used to have before... No, it doesn't matter.
A blur. Derek flew backward, slamming into a stone wall. Alora continued to focus, a swirling nimbus of light around her growing stronger with every moment. I slowed as I went down the stairs. Saffron turned his head toward me.
Oh, hello. You're the one I was meaning to talk to later. But now I'm in a poor mood, so I think I'm just going to go ahead and kill you either way.
Haste! I wasn't anywhere close to fast enough to hit him, even layering as much mana as I could throughout my body. I didn't try. I just threw Saris toward Derek as quickly as I could. Saffron blurred and almost casually snatched the sword out of the air.
What's...
Ah! He dropped the sword as his hand began to burn where he touched Saris's grip. Then Derek slammed into his back and pressed him into the wall.
Now hold still!
Derek grabbed Saffron's arms and pinned him against the stone. I rushed for Saris. Alora's hands glowed brighter, almost blinding to look at. I'd never seen that much mana collected into a single spell. Not even close.
Alora! Hit him now!
You're in the way, idiot!
I know! Hit him through me!
Derek yelled. Saffron laughed.
Are you joking? There's no way...
You absolute idiot! Alora pointed her right hand. Fine! If you want to die here, die! Alora began to chant, mana emerging from her mouth. Burning bright with starry light, your strength and mine are one! Saffron's struggles against Derek intensified, but Derek managed to keep him pressed against the wall, for the moment at least.
I call upon your divine might, flames that can burn even the soul of the sun, rage of the god Phoenix!
The mana crystal in the ring on Allura's right hand shattered. An explosion of white flames enveloped her, rising into the shape of a blazing bird. Allura, barely visible,